evening. I'm Kilowatt 2, Romeo, India Whiskey. My name is Dick. You'll also hear Mel, Kilo 2, Kilo, Echo, Yankee. Mel and Dick run a thing called the Technical Med. Major purpose of the Technical Med is education. We gather the clan on Sunday nights. Stand by a second. This particular repeater has reasonably good coverage for northern New Jersey, southern New York, and southwestern Connecticut. So in that tri-state area, there's a lot of brain power. Mel and Dick and the group that gets together here on Sunday nights try to tap into that brain power. We try to find out how all of this complicated stuff works, all of this radio equipment. Most of the questions get answered, but not all the time. Most of the answers are accurate, but not perfectly. And when those errors are finally pointed out to us, we correct those. So it's an evolving body of knowledge that we're coming up with as to how to make your radio equipment work better and how to understand the way it does work. A person signs into the Technical Med by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and the word yes, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. You need not sign in if you're just listening. After 27 and a half years, we sort of believe that there are people out there in the tri-state area that are listening. This is Technical Net number 1290 of the series that began in September of 1982. Okay, so do we have any check-ins? Call letters, name, and the word yes. K2RIW listening.
KC2RFN, Alan, yes.
November 2, X-ray, Juliet, November, Wesley, yes.
Okay, so far we've got Alan and Wesley. Anyone else? Give me your call letters and name and the word yes at this time.
Good evening all, K2KEY.
And that man's name is Mel. Okay, we have more than enough to get started. Alan's got a particular project that he's running that hopefully you'll eventually hear about, but we don't know for sure. And I owe him an email in answer to the last one he sent to me. So what would you like to know about tonight? Or what would you like to discuss, Alan? KC2RFN, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, yeah, this is KC2RFN. I'm actually not going to comment on the project, but I'm going to comment on something that Alex N2NNU had brought up last week. About the reason for the donut hole just around an antenna, that is, where there's no radiation. And I was reading through the ARRL antenna book and came across a very succinct answer I thought might be worth reading out there if there were other people who were curious about it, too. I should say that Alex and I were talking about strange and interesting phenomenon the week before that TechNet, so I know that this was something that we were both very curious about, and as it turns out, the answer is pretty anticlimactic, and it's as follows. I'm just going to drop for a second, and it's a very quick answer.
Take your time.
Okay, if you place a receiving antenna that you're using to analyze a particular antenna too close to an antenna you wish to measure, mutual coupling occurs between the two antennas, and that'll actually alter the pattern. The region that this occurs in is called the reactive near field, and that's right around the actual antenna. And according to the book, because the magnetic field is predominant over the electric field in this region, the antenna acts as though it was a lumped constant inductor or capacitor, storing energy in the reactive field rather than propagating into space. And this is in section 2.7 of the latest ARRL handbook. So the bottom line is that this, just like in quantum physics, the observing of the process actually interferes with it to one extent. And the other extent is that the antenna at that, the radiation at that close point to the antenna looks like a bunch of lumped inductors or capacitors. And so the energy gets stored instead of being radiated, and this satisfies all the physical requirements of this universe, so I'm very satisfied with that. I thought it would be a much more mysterious and deep answer, but that's basically it.
What you said is true, Alan. remember, D is the effective diameter of the effective capture area. The effective capture area and of the antenna has a certain diameter. That's the D. Square that D, multiply it by 2, divide by the wavelength, and that defines the region which is the threshold between the reactive near field, if you're closer, and the Fraunhofer zone, or the far field, if you're further away. That's the transition between the two. Not everyone uses the exact same number, 2D squared of a lambda. The more conservative people doing antenna testing will use something like 3 or 4 D squared of a lambda. And once in a blue moon, you'll hear 1 D squared of a lambda. But the majority of the good antenna books will call it 2D squared of a lambda. What's magic about that region is that the wavefront coming out of the antenna hasn't fully formed, it hasn't fully arranged itself into a TEM wave, a transverse electromagnetic wave. It has a significant amount of curvature of field, whereas the far field region, the wave is a really flat field. In other words, the instantaneous phase front is a flat surface. Up close inside of that reactive near field region, it's a curved surface. Let me drop.
Comments from Antoine, anyone?
Wesley, Alex recognized. I'm going to turn it over to him in a minute. The reason why this near-field, far-field measurement region is very important to a person doing quantitative antenna testing in an anechoic chamber or an outdoor reflective ground plane antenna range, but if you're on an antenna range and you're trying to measure the pattern of the antenna, if you're beyond the 2D squared over lambda region, the pattern that you measure is now independent of range. You can make that, if for instance your far field began at 10 feet from the antenna, and you make a measurement at 10 feet, 20 feet, 1,000 feet, and a mile, for instance, and you made a pattern measurement in each one of those distances, in theory you would come up with the exact same pattern. Whereas, if you make a measurement closer than that and you don't use any of the correction procedures, you come up with a pattern that's different. In general, the side lobes will seem to be a little bit stronger. The null between the main lobe and the side lobe will seem to disappear. The apparent gain will be lower. And you get a number of perturbations. You get a number of aberrations of apparent gain and apparent antenna pattern. On top of that, when you're beyond the near field region, the antenna obeys inverse square law. That is to say, every time you double the distance between you and the phase center of the antenna, you get one quarter of the power flux density, watts per square meter. Let me drop. So the antenna behaves like a point source, so to speak, at infinity when you're beyond the near field region, when you're beyond the 2D squared over lambda. You can make real antenna measurements. You can assess in a way traceable to the Bureau of Standards. You can measure the gain, the pattern, the polarimetry, and whatever. Essentially, all of those parameters start degrading in accuracy and start coming up with brand new numbers when you're inside of the near field range. As you get further and further inside of the near field range, the antenna no longer behaves by inverse square law. It starts behaving by inverse third, fourth, and fifth law. In the case of a parabolic dish antenna, when you're inside of the near field range, what happens is that portion of the reflector, the main parabolic reflector, are out of phase compared to the bore side of the antenna. So individual portions of the antenna start acting out of phase, and you get a wiggle of apparent gain versus distance. And you also get some numbers that are a little bit crazy. Now, when it comes to the antenna that Wesley is talking about, Wesley and/or Alex, the measurement, if I understand correctly, the donut hole that he experienced, let me drop. I believe that donut hole, there's at least two different ways of defining an antenna. A simple antenna like a dipole as to having a donut hole to it. In the case of the three-dimensional true spherical pattern in all of 41,253 square degrees of space, so-called 4 pi steradians, all angles of space around the antenna. If you drew that antenna pattern in three-dimensional space for a straight, flat, wire dipole you would end up with a pattern that looks like a donut. That's one kind of donut. That's a fancy way of saying the antenna radiates the strongest signal broadside to the wire in all directions broadside to the wire, and there's an apparent null in the pattern collinear with the wire off the end. That's one kind of a donut. I think there's a slim chance that last week we were also discussing another kind that I didn't hit, and that is when the antenna is a particular distance above the ground, and you're a certain distance away from the antenna, and you're making field strength measurements, you can end up with a region where the apparent power output into your field strength meter goes into a dip. And so you get a close-up region where you measure power, and measure E field. A little bit further in distance, you measure an apparent dip in power, and then further again away, you measure a power increase again. And that could be due to multipath. You're getting a direct signal from the antenna, you're getting a reflected signal off the ground, and depending on the geometry of where you hold the field strength meter, how many feet above the ground and how many feet away from the antenna, you can get an apparent null. So that's a second kind of a donut-like pattern. I'm not quite sure which one Alex was referring to, but let me turn it over to Alex because he said he wanted to make a comment, and maybe he'll clear that up for us. N2NNU.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
And that's what you're not supposed to do. You're supposed to be watching your watch, and I didn't do it. N2NNU, the radio voice of Yonkers, K2RIW. Go ahead, Alex.
The sun is coming up, W2SCT Mobile. Checking in.
Okay, I'm going to go over to you in a minute after Alex. I would like to hear a couple of words on what you may have found out there, Peter. Alex first. Go ahead, Alex.
Hello, Dick. Hello, everybody. I don't know, I was thinking about that for a long time. However, it did not address my initial question. I never asked how it is done. I actually said I'm not curious about that, because I know I cannot find the answer wherever I can find it. My question was, and I quote, why found Mother Nature the necessity to do that? Why does Mother Nature found the necessity to have a hole right next to the antenna? Why is it that the hole is round or square and not square? I mean, everything has a reason for why it's there present, but what I was asking, not how it is done. How it's done, it's written all over the place. I want to know why it is done.
Okay. Alex, you want to know why it is done. You're going to have to give me a few more words in English to describe what is the it you're referring to. I know it relates to the word donut. And donut relates, in one case, to the antenna pattern. In another case, it relates to the plot you could make around your antenna with a field strength meter as you walk around the backyard and the neighbor's yard and down the street and whatever. There are certain regions where you get a stronger and weaker field strength measurement, and if you plotted that on a top view map of your territory, that would also look a little bit like a donut. Which one of those kinds of donuts, or is there a third kind of donut that you're asking the why about? So what is the it that has the donut? Which one of the three possible donuts are you referring to, Alex? N2NNU, K2LIW in the TechNet.
As long as a donut, I don't care which one it is, because they're all having the same characteristics. They have a hole in it. And my question is, why is the hole there necessary by the Mother Nature? We know how it is done. That's fine. But why is it done? That's my question.
Quick sub-question, Dick.
Yeah, I think that was Alan. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, KC2RFN, just quickly. The book is not clear on whether that hole is actually really there, or the hole only seems to be there because of the presence of the field strength meter or whatever antenna you're using to analyze the actual antenna. So they're not very clear on whether it's really there, or it's only there because our measuring equipment interferes with the actually with the actual measurement at that distance. I assume that's not the case, but maybe that is the case. So I'll hand it back to you, Dick.
KC2WYP, checking in, and I have a question when you get a chance.
WYP, recognized. Yeah, you're talking now about the so-called Heisenberg uncertainty principle or something like that. In the case of extremely infinitesimal small particles, like the protons and neutrons that are in the nucleus of an atom, or the electron or the cloud of electrons that are going around an atom, in that particular case, the particles that you're trying to measure are so extremely infinitesimally small that any reasonable instrumentation you can come up with will disturb their characteristics in the process of making a measurement. When you get up to the macroscopic and the real-sized world, where in the case of an antenna I might be testing in my backyard, the total number of electrons that are flowing down that wire of the antenna is a huge number. You know, 10 to the 20 power is the number of electrons that are involved in that particular process. So there's very, very little Heisenberg uncertainty principle. In other words, my instrumentation, if I'm smart enough to use it correctly, using good practices for an antenna range, I'm not going to run into that problem. Let me drop. But now, if you have a little more understanding of what a radio wave is, I'm not saying now I've got perfect knowledge of what is a radio wave, but any of the books you read, they'll talk about a wave that's really propagating in space. It's called a TEM wave, transverse electromagnetic. That means if the wave was traveling, let's say, due north, and it's traveling parallel to the ground, and I'm making measurements 100 feet above the ground, so the ground is not very effective as far as my measurements are concerned. So the wave is traveling to the north. It is a horizontally polarized wave. That means that the H field, the magnetic field, would quite possibly be east and west. The electric field, if it was a vertically polarized wave, would be up and down, perpendicular to the Earth. And if you cross E into H, if you use the right-hand rule and cross E into H, I'm taking a vertical E field component, vertically polarized wave that's going up and down, perpendicular to the ground, and I cross it into H, which is the horizontal component of magnetic field, right-hand rule of turning of a screw would make the screw advance to the north. So I now have defined in some particular way a radio wave traveling to the north. When I have a dipole antenna, let me drop it. Let's assume now I've got a vertically polarized dipole antenna in my backyard that transmitted that wave. The vertical wave, the wire is straight up and down, launching a vertical wave. It's launching simultaneously horizontally polarized magnetic field. Because the wave that propagates must have E and H at right angles to the direction of propagation, if I now flew a helicopter directly above this vertically polarized dipole in my backyard, because it is emitting an E field that is up and down, I would be looking at the vector of E field from my helicopter where the arrow of the vector is coming straight toward me. The arrow is coming toward me. I am not seeing a parallel E field. In other words, off the end of a dipole, it cannot radiate a signal there because it cannot radiate a signal that is at right angles with the E field and at right angles to the H field to the direction of propagation. If I choose to measure what comes off that dipole directly off the end of the dipole doesn't have the real estate, it doesn't have the wherewithal, it doesn't have the stuff required to launch a electromagnetic field, an E field, that is at right angle to that direction of propagation. It can send a E field that is collinear with that direction, but it doesn't have the wire at right angles to that direction. It cannot emit a wave off the end. I know that's not the whole answer. It's the beginning of an answer. Let's see if Alex can agree that if I'm at least close to the subject. I know I've been missing the target on this one quite often. N2NNU, K2LIW in the TechNet.
W2SCT Mobile is back. It's not going to be in here too much longer, just to let you know. Go ahead, Alex.
Okay, guys. Well, Dick, I would like you to throw away your engineering hat. Forget that you're an engineer. Forget everything. And remember your English language. You just defined how, not why. I want to know why, not how. I know all of that how. I want to know why it is so. Forget about that. It's English, pure English, okay? Forget the fields, forget the measurements or that. I want to know why it is done, not how. Well, that could be too much philosophical, so, and might not have an answer, so just let's go to the next question, Dick. How about that?
Yeah. Wow. Pete, W2SET, I'm going to go over to you now because I know you're rapidly getting out of range. I'm guessing you did have a conversation with Victoria Siegel, and maybe you found out some of the questions. W2SET Mobile, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, K2RIW in the TechNet, W2SET Mobile. Very interesting. I've been listening, Alex. And Alex, you are a beautiful person, and I love the conversation I'm listening to. It's very good. And here's where it's at, Richard. They're looking into it. Vicki Siegel is not available. I spoke to her secretary, and she kind of knew what was going on, or realized that, you know, information is missing on the website. So they're going to look into it and get back to me now. I will be gone Tuesday and Friday down to Asheville, North Carolina, so it's probably going to be another week before I can get the answers and information back. But I will be in here on next week, so that's probably what's going to happen. Just to let you know, Jeff, I guess they're working on it, they're looking into it, we'll find out. So, I'll listen for a round. I'm going to start myself out and give it back to Richard. Continue with the net. My regards to everybody and happy holiday week here that we're into. And Joel, WB2AYS, sends his regards as well. And I'll probably call him in about an hour or less and speak to him a little bit. So, but he sends regards to everybody. Dick, back to you, K2RIW and W2SET Mobile.
Pete, you signed in saying that the sun is rising. From that I sense that something good was happening. Is that what you meant to convey when you said the sun is rising? Back to you, Pete, K2RIW.
Yes, Richard, the sun is rising in fact, Skyland. How about that? Actually, it's probably already up. Well, let me see. Well, it's definitely up in the Philippines. And it's probably up in Thailand and Southeast Asia as we speak for probably an hour already. Probably just starting to come up over maybe India. So just letting you know. No, because Alex and I have a thing about the sun. Alex will tell you about it, that I'm the sun god. And interesting information. Alex. All right, take care. And Richard, I'll again keep you posted on this, but I probably won't get the information back tomorrow. Unless I do, I will let you know. Otherwise, the week following this week now. W2SET Mobile. Back to you, Dick.
And one other quick question. You mentioned Joel, WB2AYS. I'm wondering what made you mention Joel at this time. Go ahead.
Well, simply because he moved to North Carolina a year and a half ago. He moved a year ago this past July. But he's been having a hard time getting back into the hobby. He has not really gotten into the hobby. He's been procrastinating with getting back, you know, and getting set up on 2 meters and all that. So I've been a little bit, you know, a lot of us have been missing him, and that's kind of like wait a minute, I got my friend here. Hold on. Sony has been procrastinating. So that's the situation. Think back to you.
Yeah, Joel has a listed address of North Merrick on Long Island, so I was a little bit confused by that. Now, for those who are listening to that conversation between me and Pete, what's involved is that, to my knowledge, there are three simultaneous lawsuits running in parallel right now in the village of Bayville, Long Island, and each of the three lawsuits are suing both the mayor and all of her staff for the village, as well as other officials, but the main thrust of the lawsuits is an attempt to remove all radio antennas from the village of Bayville, Long Island. That includes cell phone, fire, police, and emergency vehicles like ambulance. They want all of those antennas out of the town because they fear that those antennas are providing biological health hazard to their children. In order to protect their children, they want all antennas removed. In order for that situation to be investigated, the village hired a very good consulting firm that conducted an extensive survey, made an awful lot of measurements, came to the conclusion that there was no health hazard with all of the current antennas, and they simultaneously found out that the current antennas, let me drop.
Dick, can I say an additional comment after you're done?
You sure can, but they found that the antennas that are presently there are inadequate. They're only giving, at best, 85% coverage of the town. So there were specific areas in the, I said town, I meant village, there are specific areas in the village where the radio coverage is not adequate, therefore life and limb is at greater risk in those areas. Pete wanted to make a comment? Go right ahead, Pete.
I just want to verify what you're saying and to a double indemnity and say that the fire department is very upset here because they're limited, and the police officers also are frustrated because their communications here in the Bayville are very minimal, and they have a lot of problems with the emergency calls. This is a big deal for us up here. It's all about fear of the unknown, as Richard was pointing out. So it's upsetting. It's upsetting to be in this situation. And my cell phone coverage already is horrible, and it could get non-existent if there's depending on what happens. So, yeah, I'm behind the mayor in fighting this, and it is a disturbing situation. But it's all about fear not understanding things as we all know it as amateur radio operators. That's all. I just wanted to add that on. Dick, back to you to continue with the net and keep WW2SCT Mobile, and I'll keep you appraised of the latest information.
I have a question, Dick.
Okay, Alex, I'll get to your question in a minute. To continue, though, these three lawsuits have been in process now for approximately 3 years. It's becoming extremely expensive because three separate attorneys are being paid for by the people in the village. I've interviewed some of the people in the village when I gave testimony before the village board about a year and a half ago, and I gave testimony on what I sense to be the physics of the situation. Of course, I can't make a pronouncement as far as the politics and the desire of the people to so-called protect their children. This all got started because a child in the high school, in the grade school, got a case of cancer, and a faculty member got a case of cancer, and the village people think that that is the causative agent, the antennas. The police department is reasonably unhappy with the fact that the coverage of their antennas, let me drop, at best is only 85% of the town, and that's for the antennas on the top of the water tower that receive the signals from the police automobiles, from the police signal in turn is sent over to headquarters, I think it's in Hicksville, by way of a telephone line. It's not even a radio link. And each time we have a flood like we did last weekend, that telephone line stops working. So what little bit of radio communication there is becomes marginal. The fire department is also wishing there was better radio communication, and people with cell phones in the area find it to be inadequate. So the residents in the town are sort of making gallows humor out of the situation by saying that their property taxes are now twice as high because the 7,000 residents of the town are apparently sharing the cost of these three separate lawsuits, and they're saying that their property taxes are being doubled by these lawsuits. The chances of winning these lawsuits are extremely remote. So a lot of money is going to be spent, a lot of time is going to be wasted, a lot of mental anguish is going to take place. The result is going to be the sound and fury, so to speak, that signifies very little. Many government agencies will not allow the further life and limb to be at risk for the residents of the town by removing those antennas. Those antennas are not going to be removed. An act of Congress would be required to remove those antennas, legally speaking. Now, that is not going to take place. Let me drop. What we're hearing here is that there is more emotion than physics, more emotion than reality. There are a number of communities on Long Island that have developed an irrational fear of the unknown, as Pete called it. East Hampton is one of them. Portions of Oyster Bay Town are one of them. And the most striking case on Long Island seems to be the one in Bayville. I have relatives in Bayville who are involved in the situation. They know my feeling on the subject, and therefore they're pretty unhappy with me, the fact that I'm not agreeing with them. Well, I'm looking for a degree of truth. I'm not looking just to keep people happy. And life and limb to me is more important than the misunderstanding and propagating that misunderstanding. It's a sad situation. I've told many of us who listen to the TechNet that we have to slowly, it's going to be a very slow, it may take more than a generation to happen. We're going to have to very slowly educate the people in the village of Bayville that radio is their friend. It is not their enemy. And the fact that they won't even permit the so-called microwave link so that the police headquarters will get a more direct signal that is independent of the telephone line. That microwave link was going to be a 2-watt transmitter with a couple of foot diameter dish on top of the water tower aimed away from the town, aimed toward police headquarters in Hicksville, I think it is. A 2-watt signal with a couple of degree beam width from 200 feet in the air on top of a water tower, and the pencil beam aimed over the horizon toward the woods and the trees to the north, to the south, southeast, toward police headquarters. Is that creating a risk to the people in the town? Of course not. There's complete irrationality going on here. I think Alex wanted to make a question. Make sure you wait long enough and don't time out like I did. N2NNU, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Okay, didn't know that Peter is involved in that. Otherwise, I would have had a good discussion with him for about it. And you know well, Dick, my opinion about this issue. We actually discussed the details, mechanical, electrical details, and I had a feeling that you agree with me, but you couldn't say it. Something stopped you. And the fact that whatever medical people I talked to, doctors or whatnot, they told me, well, Alex, you might have something, but that requires a lot of research. This is why I was curious to see that if the guys that made that determination that RF is our friend, it's not harmful to us, have actually investigated the RF, the electromechanical field, electromagnetic fields, influence about on the nervous system, not as a cancerogenic agent. Because you know well as I know, because we spoke about it, I think that our nervous system is much, much more susceptible to electrical fields at any frequency, starting from one hertz up to whatever you want to. The lower the frequency, the worse you are. If the audience of this picnic would like to know about, more about it, I would like to share that information with me. We don't want to keep it hidden. And I actually think that a white paper about it too that I will post very soon. So the question is, those guys made a determination that RF is not dangerous to us. Did they spend $20 million like Nokia? Or how did they do that? How did they come overnight, you know, in one week or so over and said, yes, it's good for us? Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, that's a pretty good question. As this lawsuit, as the very first lawsuit took place approximately 3 years ago, where a resident of the town sued the village, the mayor, and her staff, saying that back in 1992 she committed this terrible act of allowing those antennas to be placed on the water tower, and the water tower is near the school. From their point of view, a dangerous place, because that's where the children dwell during their instruction during the day. Well, the water tower was chosen for very good reason. It's the highest piece of land in the village, it's the highest structure in the village, and you need altitude for VHF antennas to work well. At the beginning of that lawsuit, the town hired this outside consulting firm, a very respected consulting firm, that wrote something that's called the PARC Report, P-A-R-C, Papa Alpha Radio Charlie, is the name of the report and name of the organization. I've forgotten what it stands for. And the PARC committee, the PARC organization, made a large number of measurements of the fields and waves of, they made field strength measurements at probably 50 different locations in the town, and they made measurements for the cell phone, the fire, and the police, and the ambulance services, and published approximately a 50-page, well-written report. Let me drop. The well-written report presents all of the data of their measurements with a bunch of graphs, a bunch of photographs of where the measurements were made, and the traceability of those measurements to the Bureau of Standards, the calibration of their instrumentation, the relevance to the American National Standard Institute report on biohazard, the domain-defining document for the United States. They related their measurements back to that document, related it to the maximum permitted exposures, and every exposure within the town was an extremely small fraction of the maximum permitted exposure by the U.S. defining document, the ANSI IEEE report. That report and three other very good defining reports were on the village website up until some time ago. Maybe it was 6 months or a year ago. As of the last 6 months or a year ago, during the time that these lawsuits are proceeding, for reasons that are mysterious to me, all of this beautiful documentation where a person could read what is now known and, so to speak, what is not known, a person could educate himself by going to the village website. All of a sudden, all of that documentation has been removed from the village website. I'm asking why. I mean, when you have an ongoing suit where there is a significant amount of, where there's a possible significant amount of misinformation and misunderstanding, and these are documents that are the best documents we know of in the United States to try to define the situation, why should those documents giving that education be removed from the village website, be removed from the place which has the highest amount of apparent misunderstanding in this area? It seems to me like some form of minor crime is taking place because of the removal of those documents. Now, I asked Pete to ask the question to the mayor's office, why were the documents removed? And Pete has now been trying for a couple of weeks to get an answer. Who ordered them removed, and why did that person order them removed? And so, to me, the answer could be very, very interesting. I think you're asking Alex, how do we know? See, it turns out that Alex has been doing a fair amount of research on his own. He intends to make measurements. He's not quite sure now what will be the price of the instrumentation he has to acquire in order to make the measurements. But Alex is starting off with a hypothesis. Let me drop. That up till now, we have been measuring deleterious effects to human beings from the exposure of radio waves. And after 60 years of research, that report with 450 references, the so-called ANSI report, American National Standards Institute, from many people's point of view, does a very good job of defining the situation. And that document also relates to a similar set of documents in most of the other well-educated countries in the world. The United Kingdom has a similar document written by the Bureau of Radiological Health, and Japan has one, and Germany has one, and Norway has one, and Australia has one, and so on. So our documents for the United States are in alignment with those similar documents from those many other nations. For a short period of time, the documents from the Soviet Union seem to be requesting a much higher amount of safety, so to speak, a much larger margin. When we used to allow 1 milliwatt per square centimeter of maximum permitted exposure, that was like 15 years ago. In those days, the Soviet Union was claiming that they would not allow 10 microwatts instead of 10 milliwatts per square centimeter to be exceeded. However, there is tremendous amounts of evidence that that standard in the Soviet Union was not being honored, particularly when it comes to the amount of radio signals that were being directed towards the American embassy. For a significant number of years, there was a mysterious transmitter in Moscow that aimed 3 milliwatts per square centimeter at the building that was the American embassy in Moscow. It was far above their standard, but it was below our standard. So in some respects, from our point of view, it was legal, and there are people who are speculating that the reason the radio signal was being aimed at that building was to turn on the bugging device.
Repeater, time out, cancel.
There were people speculating at the time that the radio signal was being aimed at the building to turn on the bugging devices that quite possibly were located in the building, because the building had been built by local labor, hadn't been built by an American contract. There's a whole bunch of funny questions to be asked along those lines as to how that all came about. And I've talked to people who were removing the bugs from that building, and the stories they tell are very interesting, hair-raising stories about the heroic efforts that were required to remove the reasonably large number of bugging devices that were embedded into the nails and the 2x4s and the floors and the ceiling and the walls of that particular building. Even in the seal of the United States contained the bugging device. So lots of funny things were taking place during the Cold War. Now, what Alex is doing is he has started off with the premise that although you can't measure deleterious effects from radio waves, he believes that there is the possibility that radio waves create some form of disruption from the normal nerve impulses, particularly the nerve impulses of the cardiovascular system. And Alex is going to be quite possibly doing research in that area, writing reports on what he discovers, and the reports that he has turned up so far that give indication along these lines, I believe he has a significant list. And let me ask Alex the question. Alex, if someone sends them your email address, their email address to you, would you at this time, or is it premature, but would you be willing to send them a copy of the list of websites that you have discovered so far that address this particular area? N2NNU, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Comment.
Okay, Dick. Well, there is no internet writing about this particular area. Everybody thinks that electromagnetic wave fields are cancerogen, and I think this is a plot by the big business like Nokia, Motorola, whatnot, to direct the research in this area because they know that the results will be negative. If they would allow the scientists to go and research the issue on their own without the direction of where to go and what to do. They will find out very soon that there might be a connection. Listen, I'm a troubleshooter. I'm an electrical engineer. I know how electrical things are working. And as Tesla put it, we are all electrical. So I understand what's going on in our body when it comes to electrical stuff. The issue is here that I know to connect the dots too. I see the dots and I did connect them. Unfortunately, the dots are not going towards cancer. They're going to show you that they can create problems with your cardiovascular system, especially. Now, what is happening in the brain, I don't know. I didn't care about it because I'm not affected yet there. Well, I might be crazy a bit, but that's another story. But, let me wrap. But the most sensitive part of our body is the heart. The inside of the heart, what is the Hiss bundle. This is one of the... Well, I have to publish that paper first. It's not yet ready. I have only about 20 pages on it. Probably most of it is gibberish. I have to rearrange whatever. There are more notes than a white paper. But we can make a good discussion about it. How about that, Vic? We have can we make a small section on this net that will talk about biohazards of the RF? Back to you.
Okay.
So Whiskey Yankee Papa with a question unrelated to this. Again, when you get a chance.
Whiskey Yankee Papa recognized. When it comes to is a discussion of radio interference, radio disruption of the cardiovascular system, is that an appropriate subject for the technical net? I think the answer is definitely yes. Now, should we dwell on that particular subject for 2 solid hours on a particular night? Quite possibly not, depending on how many questions we get. But after we answer the people who sign in with questions and then go to our mailbag, the people who are in the process of getting their ham radio license, and they mail emails to Mel and I, after we go through those questions, then to go back and have a discussion on the subject, without a doubt it's very appropriate as I see it. Before I pick up with Mr. YWP, Wesley, I know, wanted to make a comment. N2XJN, K2RIW. Go ahead, Wesley.
N2XJN. Well, the comment is that there was no 2x4s in U.S. Embassy in Russia. And the reason for that is because the traditional way that the walls are being built in this area of Eastern Europe is a cement, concrete, brick, no 2x4s. You do not have a sheetrock over there. And right now you do have, but there was no sheetrock at that time. Now, the way that the finish of the wall inside is being done is actually there is a cement with the, gosh, I don't know how to say it, Vapno. With the additional component added, and it's actually dropped to the wall, and it creates a flat surface, very nice looking one, and the wires inside, let me drop, are simply in the channels that are either created before that concrete or cement was put into the wall, or just chopped by hand or by the other device. Now, what the Russians did is, the most common bug that they have put is, they actually created the resonance circuitry. And it was in terms of whether radio resonance circuitry or mechanical resonance circuitry. That means they put a number of steel bars or copper bars that were actually inserted inside the walls before the cement was poured into the wall. and they were actually calculated to resonate at a certain frequencies. And the walls were constructed also that they should actually amplify the cavities between the walls. They found also the cavities between the walls, the concrete walls, that react as a mechanical amplifier. Back to you, Antexia.
Yeah, this is getting very close to an area that used to be classified, it no longer is. There's a beautiful book that was published about 8 years ago on what's called frequency selective surfaces. If you take a chunk of concrete, a chunk of foam, a chunk of wood, or whatever, and if you bury metallic objects in that insulating surface, and if the metallic objects have the right shape, the right length, they will act as a lens to focus radio waves. You can have frequency selective focusing, reflection, or transmission through these FSS, frequency selective surfaces. And I've done some work on one of those. In fact, it involves one of my patents, a certain kind of frequency selective surface that has a very desirable characteristic that can be used in an airport or in a supermarket. So passive metallic objects suspended in a insulating medium, whether it be nails in the wall, so to speak, or a concrete wall, or whether it be chunks of metal buried in a piece of foam, some very desirable radio properties can be synthesized. Yagi antennas, among other things. So that's a whole beautiful area that until about 8 or 10 years ago was considered classified. It was being related at those days. Let me drop it. It was related to the way, some of the ways that were being used for making a low observable aircraft, stealthy airplanes, among other things. But that's now reasonably public knowledge, all of that information. And if you simply do a web search on frequency selective surfaces, FSS, you'll get quite a bit of material. You'll be referred to a book that was written by a man who headed up the Electroscience Laboratory of Ohio University, where a lot of that early research was being taken place, among many other places. Fascinating stuff. You may think you understand radio. You may think you understand the way radio propagates. And Alex is asking some very poignant questions as to what is really happening. And there are times when they're not so easy to answer. We did get the two sign-ins now from Skyler, KC2WYP.
Understand the comment.
Okay, let me go over to Skyler, and then I'm going to come back to you, Wesley. KC2WYP, go right ahead, Skyler.
KC2WYP. Hi, Richard. This question's unrelated, so I'm going to ask if you may want to go over to Wesley's face back on that topic you're on. Over.
Very magnanimous. Okay. We'll get back to you after Wesley. Go right ahead, Wesley.
November to X-ray, Juliet November. For the net. Well, one of the examples of a very simple spy device that was utilized by Russian was if there was a tube and purposely there was a tube made out of plastic and that tube was supposed to be a tube that carries on telephone wires. There were two or three windings of supposedly construction material, the copper or silk construction material. And actually that created a loop perpendicularly to the pipe with the certain length of the wire creating the dipole. At the distance, certain distance from that one in the thickness of the wall, there was another parallel bar that was actually creating the Yagi antenna, and another one, and another one, and another one, and it was calculated with the length. Now, when you put the wire, the telephone wire, inside that plastic tube, Dick, what is going to happen? Back to you, Andrew Jim.
Well, I've done some experimentation with taking telephone wire and Cat 5 wire, Category 5 wire that's used for thousands of feet of computer wiring inside of buildings, and I personally have sent 1,000 megacycle signals down those wires to measure the properties. When you put them inside of a plastic tube and when you don't. If you put them inside of a plastic tube, the local impedance, which usually is 100 ohms between the two pairs of wires, put them inside of a plastic tube and you get a lower number of ohms and a slightly lower velocity of propagation. So you can, if you want to, have a secondary control of velocity factor and impedance by putting the wires in a closely fitting piece of dielectric material, like plastic. That's one of many things that can happen. It can actually probably also create something like the radio equivalent of a light pipe if you do it just right. I wonder if this is what you're referring to, Wesley. N2XJN, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Well, what's happened is actually that the signal that was passing by the electric current that was passing by through the telephone wires created an electromagnetic field around that. Now, I know of, because I don't want to go to the specific too much, but if you apply to that circuitry a piece of magnet at a certain position, you're actually creating a passive device that is able to react like the first receiver that was ever made by the human being with the diode. But physically, that piece of magnet that was added to that circuitry was not the diode. At the effect of that, Russians were able from the distance of a few kilometers to actually hear what people are talking about using that particular circuitry. Dick, back to you, and to XGM.
Diabolical.
Yeah, there are techniques of taking ferrite-like materials, wrapping them around a conductor, and as you pass a magnetic field through those magnetic materials, you will change their properties as far as velocity of propagation, gyrotropy, as it's called. In other words, they can have one velocity of propagation from north to south and a different velocity of propagation from south to north. So by putting various things along a piece of wire or a pair of twisted wires, you can change the local characteristic, you can cause local transmission to take place, you can construct a directional coupler that samples the signal that's on the wire. There's lots of ways of doing what's called wire tapping, even though you do not make physical contact to the wire itself. Once you understand of the 14 different kinds, I'm not sure if it's exactly 14, of the 14 different kinds of transmission lines, I'm talking now about twin lead and coax and microstrip and triplate strip line and thin line and coplanar waveguide with ground plane and so on. There's lots and lots of kinds of transmission lines in the modern world. If you have enough understanding of those, there are ways you can sample the signal that is going down that transmission line and apparently not be disturbing the signal and making no direct physical contact to it. And then you can cause that transmission line to do some local radiating or local sampling. There's a whole art and science to doing that. A person who understands, let me drop.
I have a question. There was somebody who was commenting my comment. I need this person to give me a call, his call sign, and I just want to understand his comment. Back to you, Andrew Jim.
Okay. Are you talking about tonight someone made comment to your comment? Is that what you're saying, Wesley? Go ahead.
Yeah, there was a few words that just that person said. I just want to know what he meant, and to XJM.
That could have been Pete, W2SET, Whiskey 2 Sierra Echo Tango. He's a man who was driving toward Bayville at the time. He made some comments around the time that you and I were having a back and forth. So maybe that's the person that you're referring to. I'm looking at my list now of everyone who has signed in so far tonight. So all I'm saying is that there's a lot to be learned when it comes to how do antennas work and how do transmission lines work. And there's an amazing amount of cross-coupling of information between transmission lines and antennas. When is an antenna a transmission line?